Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Northwest Prime, bringing Seattle to the world and the world to Seattle. Follow us on Twitter at iGuestInfo. Send us your questions and we'll try to answer. Now enjoy the show. Thanks for joining us today. We're really, really thrilled to bring you an excellent show. We have wonderful guests on today highlighting excellence in Latino America. I have as a co-host today a friend of mine that I met through music. I've always said that I believe that music is the universal language that every soul speaks. I met Patty Cameron through music about a year ago. She's just become a really great friend of mine. She's the co-founder of Utopia Media and Entertainment. She's also an English-Spanish interpreter for various public and private agencies, and she's passionate about helping people communicate effectively. She was born in Mexico. She's a resident now over the past 12 years of the Pacific Northwest. She has a desire to build bridges of appreciation and understanding between the American and the Latino communities, and I'm also very passionate about that. And in doing that and being a part with Patty, she's exposed me to wonderful people, again, just great souls on this human experience that we're all going through on this journey we call life. We are thrilled today to have on an icon in the Latino community. He's also crossed over that barrier into mainstream, and he's very well known just in general in music and in culture and in American life. And his name is Oscar Hernandez. He's a two-time Grammy winner. He founded the Spanish Harlem Orchestra. He's worked with some of the biggest names in music, Ruben Blades, if you happen to know who Ruben Blades is. If you don't, you can look him up. He's a show and a phenomenon unto himself. He's worked with Paul Simon, many, many other people, and we are just thrilled to have Oscar with us today and to give us a little bit of his time. Thank you, Oscar, for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be on with you both, and to the audience in the Northwest part of the world, and I think Seattle in particular, it's always great to be able to speak to that audience up there. I know that there's a fan base for our music, and having been up there a few times, it's a special place, and I love the opportunity to get up there and present our music to the people that know it and the people that don't know it, because the people that don't know it then become familiar, and they go like, wow, this is some pretty good music. So thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Can you kind of tell the audience, Oscar, a little bit of just of how your musical journey started and got you to the place where you are today?
Well, I guess I'd have to try and make a long story short, because it started a long time ago in the 60s when I was a young kid growing up in the Bronx, New York. And New York was, it was basically the center of a Latino cultural revolution in the United States, but particularly in the city of New York, where Latinos emigrated since the 30s and 40s, and I'm a first-generation Latino born of Puerto Rican parents from the Bronx. And part of my upbringing and being exposed to what the culture was the music. So for me, part of being a youngster and early teenager was listening to my older brothers, watching my older brothers and sisters get ready for the social events that were part of those days in New York, you know, and a big part of those social events was the music, and the music that was being played on the radio in Latino radio stations, and the music that was coming from every other window in my neighborhood, being from the South Bronx. So toward that end, I was exposed to so much music, and when I got to see some, you know, musicians perform live, I got the bug. And early on, and I started playing trumpet when I was about 12, switched to piano when I was 14, and it all started from there. It was you know, I feel now looking back, it was a blessing for me. The way things happened, the way things developed, it was all meant to be. So, you know, music was, I realized that music was meant to be a part of my life. I was, I come from a family of 11. I'm one of 11 siblings, and I'm the only one that came out as a musician. So I truly feel blessed that music has been part of my life now for about close to 50 years, incredible that it may seem, but 40-something years. And I've gotten to travel all over the world, play with some of the best musicians in the world, playing some of the best venues. And as you know, the last 12 years, been able to, you know, kind of put my own foot forward with my own music with Spanish Harlem Orchestra, which basically is a way of me keeping the music on the pedestal that I feel it merits to be on, because this is great music. And I feel proud to now have, say, you said 2 Grammys, but it's actually 3. I've won 3 Grammys.
Wow.
2
great.
With Spanish Harlem Orchestra, and 1 with Ruben Blades this past year. So I feel really blessed to be able to make my own mark and keep this, you know, the tradition of what this music is alive and well, and expose people all over the world to it. I mean, with Spanish Harlem Orchestra, we've been, I can't even tell you, we've traveled to Australia, to Singapore, to Japan, to Hong Kong, to Russia. We've been all over the world. And it's a true blessing, because to see the reaction of people, you said, you know, when you started the show, music is a universal language, and it certainly is, because I've seen people of all walks of life touched by what we do, and it doesn't get any better than that, that's for sure.
That is true. What's it like for a little boy from the Bronx to grow up and go to Russia and Hong Kong and have those different life experiences, completely different from life in the Bronx, I would imagine?
Totally different. And I could tell you that I come from a place that people have no clue. A lot of people, unfortunately, have no clue about the world, because their world is what surrounds them, and they don't get the chance to travel and see what the rest of the world is about. And that hasn't been the case with me being a musician. So for me, it's an incredible blessing that I'm totally grateful for. Even my family, I could see the sense of wonderment. So what's it like going to Japan? What's it like going to Russia? What's it like going to Australia? What are the people like? And you could try to describe it. And actually, the world has become a smaller place now with the internet and with all the media that exists. So they have a little bit, you know, everybody has a whole lot better clue of the rest of the world. But it wasn't that way 20, 25 years ago when I started and I was traveling. So, but nevertheless, it's a very cool thing, I got to tell you.
And I wanted to just let people know that you didn't really have a lot of special training. You were a product of the public school system, self-taught mostly in piano. And so if there's a will, there's a way, so to speak. You know, you found the passion and love for music, and then you made a way, you charted your own course to make things happen for yourself.
Without a doubt. And for me, being brought up poor, although I can't say that, you know, I had a great childhood. Although we were poor, we didn't know it. We had a lot of love, and I think back when we were kids, college was never mentioned in my home, because it just wasn't part of, you know, the reality of, you know, what it was and where we came from. That being said, it wasn't until I was about 25 that, you know, I was scared, you know, to no end, I decided to enroll in college and get my degree in music. And I found it like, wow, yeah, I can do this. And I did, you know, subsequently get my degree in music. But that's not what made me a good musician. What made me a good musician was the experience of actually playing with great musicians, always playing with, you know, at a young age with musicians who were much better than I was. And that was the school for me. That was the education for me. And, but nevertheless, I did go on and get my degree in music, and I did study. But originally, yes, it was like self-taught and learning on my own. And I was fortunate to be exposed to really great musicians at an early age. I was playing professionally when I was already 16. So, and again, you know, just part of the scene back in those days. The bands that were on the scene, even the younger musicians, were a way for me to learn from them, and the musicians who were older than me, and could I could benefit from their experience. So it was a unique way that I did it, but I wouldn't change anything. It was very special nevertheless. And here I am now, 40-something years later, blessed with my own career, and looking forward to more and more of doing what I'm able to do on the level that I need to do it, which is play this music with the passion and love and the respect and the integrity that it deserves, and put it on the pedestal that it merits. And toward that end, I could tell you that Spanish Harlem Orchestra have played in some of the, in all, just about all of the you know, the world's jazz and music festivals, and we've left our own mark. You know, the quality speaks for itself. The 4 CD Grammy nominations and the 2 Grammys won speak for themselves. It's quality music that I learned at the hands of some of the best musicians that have played this music. So it's kind of my responsibility to carry that banner high. And I don't take it lightly. I'm very clear on my mission and what I'm about and what this music is about. So it's a good time for me.
Absolutely. Patty, did you have a question?
I do have a question. I know that it can be a little bit hard sometimes to stay true to what the kind of music you want to play, because sometimes the music world kind of, it wants to drag you into the popularity and the commercialism. How has it been possible? I mean, how are you doing it? How are you staying true to the music that you want to play?
Well, that's a really good question, because you do get a lot of pressure. And unfortunately, you know, this is a great country we live in, but unfortunately sometimes things get caught up in the trap of everything comes down to money, and the integrity of things suffer because of it. But in my case, although we don't generally get played on commercial radio, although we've won 2 Grammys, I think it's a reflection on them and somewhat, you know, an ill of our society, that we need to, you know, as intelligent people, learn how to deal with in a responsible manner. And certainly I try to deal with it on my own terms. But I think probably to answer it as simply as I can, as succinctly as I can, would be to say that I just play music that I absolutely love, and I'm genuine to it, and I'm a slave to that concept. So for me, it's real easy. When we go into the studio, there's a lot of work that goes involved in preparing, you know, the production end of it, and I basically choose songs that I love, I arrange, and I have people that I respect arrange, as well as myself, the music. People that have the finger and the pulse, on the pulse of what this music is. And that's only a select few. So I basically have my a sense of how I want to do it. And it all comes down to when I leave the studio, I absolutely love what I'm hearing. If not, it won't go on one of our records. And I'm genuine to that. I try to be as genuine as possible. I don't let anybody impose any guidelines other than that. You know, for me, sometimes like even one of the musicians will question, well, what about this song? And I said, well, look, I love it. And for me, that's the bottom line. It's like sometimes, oftentimes, all the time actually, people ask me, so which is your favorite song? You know, on the record you have 14 songs or 12 songs. And I go, all of them.
Yes.
The truth of the matter is I could hear at any given moment, hear one and just go like, oh. So it depends on what I'm hearing, you know, what I'm hearing at the moment. But I love them all. They're like my children. And for me, I'm genuine to that. And that, it comes from a real place, put it that way. So that would be my way of doing things, Patty.
Great. Thank you.
I think that answers your question.
What would you tell young musicians? Now, you know, Oscar, we're seeing, you know, the music education cut out of schools. It might be harder for young people to get the basics as far as music education. Would you have any advice for young musicians if they feel it in their soul, how they could, you know, follow through maybe at a basic level of learning music?
Yeah, for me, I would tell young musicians, if like you say, they feel it in their soul, and follow those feelings. And there's one word that I always, you know, try to impart to young people, and that's perseverance. Because in this business, you're confronted with so many things, and oftentimes in life with so many obstacles, and you have to realize that that's just part of life. It's part of the game. It's part of the real deal also. I say game, but it's not a game. But part of what we have to face is as people and as musicians too. So I would say persevere through whatever insecurities and doubts you may have, because they're always going to exist, and follow your passion. If you're true to it, try to involve yourself in many aspects of music in as many ways, and try to involve yourself with musicians who know more than you, that are better than you, that can kind of help you along, because you can't do it by yourself. So, and learn as much as you can about your craft and where you want to go. So there's no one set piece of advice, but I think, you know, those are some general pieces of advice that I would give to young musicians. But the key word would be perseverance.
I think that's good advice, because you had even just said yourself, you know, you've been in the business over 40 plus years. And I'm sure not all of that was an easy road. I'm sure that you had to pave your own way, and there were some struggles in there, but you said you wouldn't change a thing. So looking back, the good times and the bad times got you to where you are now.
Well, no doubt, and I tell people now, I think I'm a really good band leader, but part of being a good band leader was because I learned from not only the best, but I learned from the worst. I always tell people that. So I was exposed to good, you know, to people good and bad, and now it's my responsibility as an adult and a person in a position of responsibility to do it right, and to do like how I, you know, feel is the way, you know, it should be done. And I'm pretty non-compromising at this point in terms of how I want things done and how I think things should be. Always trying to be as fair and as possible, and listening to people. I mean, I still listen to people, but the bottom line is you have to make your own decision being in a position as a band leader, and surround yourself by good people. That's one of the things I make sure I do, mm-hmm. because when you're in a group setting, it's like a team. It's like the Seattle Seahawks. It's not one or two people. It's the team total concept of everybody buying into that. That's what makes it a good team. And in my case, I'm pretty clear on it, and I try to impart that and demand that from the musicians that, you know, that I perform with.
Patty?
Yes. I have a question here from a fan of yours. How did it feel to go back or to play again with Stage del Solar during Ruben Blades' tour? You know, everybody, I was happy to see that tour was happening. I mean, Stage del Solar is wow, too. So how did you feel about it?
Well, it was very exciting, and I have to say, you know, Ruben is not only a dear friend, Ruben Blades, and somebody I worked with, and I was a musical director for 13 years, but somebody that, you know, we got to experience a lot together, and we hadn't performed together in a while. So when the idea came up to do a 25-year reunion world tour, felt totally blessed and totally honored to be part of that again. And also to get to play with musicians who are not only excellent musicians, but they're lifelong friends. I don't really get to play with that often anymore, because we've gone our separate, you know, on our separate paths. But for us to reunite, it was truly special. And as you may or may not know, we did a live DVD recording, a video,
yes,
and a CD recording that I got to see when it came out, and that's, it's documented. It's pretty good music on the highest level. So extremely honored, you know, to have been part of that tradition, part of that era in my life, and working with Ruweng, who's one of the most talented musicians of any genre, you know, bar none,
mm-hmm,
that I've got to share the stage with, because he's pretty prolific, not only as a singer, but as a songwriter, composer, humanitarian, philosopher. He's extremely a gift to the world, and to have him as a friend and as a mentor, and somebody also that has been an example to me, because I like to think that we're pretty much the same way in many regards, but, you know, he was my band leader for those 13 years, and I got to see how he, you know, speaking directly to the fact that, you're exposed to people good and bad. Well, he was, you know, the extreme of what the good is. Somebody who's really clear on a vision, somebody who's really clear on how he wants his music, and is pretty talented.
Yes.
So it pretty much doesn't get much better than that.
So do you consider that it's important to have a role model, I mean, for all young musicians and for musicians that are out there? Do you think that it's important to always find a role model or to get together with that teacher, with that person that will inspire you to move forward?
Yeah, I think everybody at some point in their lives have people that they, you know, give them a little push, or gives them a little bit incentive, or gives them the encouragement, or says the right words. So seek those people out. They're out there for sure. There's a lot of people who've accomplished a lot who are willing to share and do good and right by others. So I think that's always important. And I, in my own case, I try to, whenever I encounter those situations, try to be as positive and as encouraging. I could tell you that when I did The Cape Man on Broadway with Paul Simon, on Wednesday evenings, I mean the Wednesday matinees, they would have the inner city school kids come to the show. And then we'd have a meet and greet afterwards and a question and answer. And for me, it was so gratifying to tell them, you know, here are kids from the South Bronx, from, you know, some of the ghettos in the city, you know, that would come, and I'd say, look, I come from a family of 11. I came from where you come from. And, you know, I never had aspired to be in the musical theater, but here I am, and if I can do it, you can do it. So it's extremely gratifying to be put in those positions. And it was fun to, you know, to see the kids, the excitement on their face, to be able to talk to Paul and to Ruben Blaze and to Mark Anthony and to, you know, part of the crew that was involved in the production of it. So those are, you know, things that happen that are always kind of like special, that you always kind of look back on and bring a smile to your face.
Mm-hmm. And let me tell you something, Laurie, about this man. When I first met him, he was so down to earth. I mean, he's a huge musician. He's a huge artist. And I asked him for his email because I wanted to get in touch with him and to talk to him. And with no doubt, I mean, yes, here it is. I mean, that's Oscar Hernandez. And to me, those are the kind of musicians and artists that are just, they blow my mind, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing about Oscar, he's a good person. Just not only, he also has a musical gift, but you could just tell with Oscar that he's just a good soul. So it's just transcends everything.
Yes.
Well, I mean,
You're amazing.
Oh, thank you. You guys are being too nice. But the truth is, I have to give my mother, my parents, and my mother in particular, you know, credit for being the strong person that she was, you know, raising 11 kids and being able to impart her positiveness to us and how to live correctly. And but I've seen it in other walks of life, and for me it's a choice that you make. You grow up and you're exposed to many things, good and bad, and I think that you have to make personal choices. And almost all the time, exclusively, life comes down to choices. So I see it enough negative in my life to know that it's out there. It was very close at hand. It didn't escape me. I have a brother who passed away as a drug addict, and I guess that was kind of something that happens in your life and that you can look back and say, well, that was a choice too I decided to make. He decided to make in his life. And so those things, they have a way of affecting you. And thank God in my case, they affected me, in a positive way. So I feel very blessed, and I keep trying to put my best foot forward in everything I do, not only in music, but in life as well. So, and it's important that we are aware of those things and be responsible towards. And in my case, I have a family, I have kids, so I try to be an example to them. The music example is always going to be there, but I think what's important is the personal example. So, nobody's perfect, but we keep striving to get things right.
Absolutely. Just got to keep, it just goes back to perseverance. Life's going to knock you down along the way. It just happens to everybody. And you just got to get up and dust yourself off and say, oh, that was a good one, life. Thank you. Well, I'm going to keep on going. Yeah.
Yeah. And, it certainly is. I know everybody, we all, as part of being, people in this world that we're in, that's part of what we have to go through. And I think you have to will yourself to keep being strong because it's just being fortunate as well, because certain people don't handle adversity well. And I think if that's the case, you have to try and, look at yourself in the mirror and try to find a way to supersede those things and keep going in a positive way and to find, spiritual solidarity in your life as to how you can do those things to keep moving forward in a positive way. So for me, it's been a journey. It's still, and it'll always be a journey. But again, happy to share my thoughts with you guys and with the listening audience in Seattle. Hopefully, I'd love to get there soon. As you may know, one of our singers now is from Seattle.
That was my next question. When are you coming?
I'd love to say soon. It's not that easy, with a band size of 13 musicians that we have. We will be in San Francisco July 26th and July 27th, trying to look for a date up in Seattle. I have no doubt that it's going to happen, but there's nothing definitive at this point in time. So I always look forward to the opportunity to get up there. Last time we were there, we played at the Jazz Alley. We were there for like 4 or 5 days, and that was great because I got to, I rented a car and got to, travel around Seattle and go to all the best places and all the, all the tourist things that exist up there that, as a tourist, that you guys take for granted, I'm sure. But there's a lot of beautiful things up there to enjoy. It's
that
like
is
me.
True. That is true.
I'm living in Los Angeles now, and I go back to New York. And fortunately for me, I go back to New York a lot, and that's where the band is. But I don't take it for granted, and I enjoy it more than I ever did when I lived there. So,
wow.
It's all good.
Oscar, friends from Veracruz, Mexico are asking, are you going to the Festival of la Salsa?
You know what?
Are you going to be
I
there?
I would love to. I've heard
Santa.
So many good things about it, and I've heard people said, look, you guys should perform there. We'll see if you can get you guys to perform. And we've performed in the Air Fair quite a few times in Mexico City. And mm-hmm. we were just in Cancun with the band playing a private event about 3 weeks ago, which was incredible because it was my first time in Cancun. But would love
really?
To go to Veracruz. Yeah, it was my first time in Cancun, and I guess
wow.
unfortunately it was only for 2 days. But fortunately, I said, "Wow, this is pretty beautiful. I got to come back here on vacation." I mean, we were very fortunate to play to perform in this resort, which is absolutely, absolutely gorgeous. And the beach and the pools were amazing, and the food was amazing. So I'm saying I gotta come back here. Patty, I'd love to say that we're going up there soon, and I keep hearing people saying we gotta get Spanish Harlem Orchestra to Veracruz, but nothing again
yes.
definitive has come by. So we'll see what happens.
Well, are you saying that you actually have to pay your musicians to play? Okay, I'm being a bad person here. Just a bad joke, but,
Unfortunately, we have our rent to pay, and we have our bills, and we have our car payments and our health insurance and on and on and on. So I would do it for free. I really would. But the truth of the matter is, in this great, beautiful world that we live in, you have to pay your way. And but I would do it for free. Veracruz, the culture, the food, the people. I love Mexico. So vamos a ver lo que pasa. Ojalá que sea pronto. That means let's see what happens.
Esperemos que sí.
Bueno,
yeah.
From your mouth to God's ears, like they say.
What are you working on next, Oscar? What can we look forward to next?
Well, I'm doing a couple of things. I just got, we're working on the new record, which I'm putting all the finishing touches because I'll be in New York in June. We're going to Europe. We'll be in Texas. We'll be in Cleveland. We'll be in Chicago in May. In June, we'll be in Europe. And then I'll be in New York, Canada, and New York, and we're doing a date in New York. But part of me being in New York is I'm going to take advantage and record the next record. So, crossing the last T's and dotting the last I's with the music, so we can go to New York, rehearse 3 or 4 days, and make another record of what I feel is great music. I know it sounds self-serving to say that. I don't mean to sound like that, but for me, it is great music, and we're recording June 29th and 30th. It's already on the docket.
Great. Well, it is great music, and it's not self-serving to say that when it's true. It is great music. We encourage everybody to, if you're not familiar with the Spanish Harlem Orchestra, easily available on iTunes and Amazon. You can go to OscarHernandezMusic.com and follow Oscar and see what he's up to and keep in touch with him.
I haven't updated my website. Somebody's been after me for the last 3 weeks. You got to update your website. But the Spanish Harlem Orchestra website is kind of updated. I still have to put in some new things that came up. But they can go to SpanishHarlemOrchestra.com. And I think there's a video of me winning one of the Grammys, which is pretty cool. Every now and then, I kind of once every 6 months, I'll just take a look at it and go like, oh, and kind of relive the moment.
Heck yeah.
It's a cool thing. It really is.
Absolutely, it's a cool thing. I mean, that is the coolest. We had Carlos Castaneda's on. He won a Grammy. He has a band called Tumbao. I had him on last year. And I told him if I had won a Grammy, I would drill a hole through it and put it on a chain, and I'd wear it around my neck everywhere I went.
Well, yeah, no, I couldn't do that. But I have
I'm
actually looking right at them. They're staring me in the face. I have them on near my fireplace.
Brian, huh?
It's a cool thing. I mean, nobody can take him away. I have a funny story. Yeah. The first time that we won the Grammy, I think it was 94. I don't remember. I mean, not 94, 2004. I went up to receive the Grammy, and then I didn't know. I just didn't know, you know, the normal protocol. But they're basically like a substitute statue that they hand you. And so they handed me the statues. I'm walking off. Somebody's taking it away. I'm going like, what? What are you doing? Are you crazy? They go, no. This is not. This is. They're going to mail you this. They'll mail you the statue. You know what I mean? I'm going like, oh.
I almost got into a fight
with the person who wanted to take it away. I didn't realize that it's just a dummy Grammy that they give you for the awards. And then, you know, as you walk off, you know, they actually have to put in the information and mail it to you a couple of months later. But, they're kind of cool things to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a lot of people have them.
It's another little funny story, but I remember the first time I went to the Grammys that we got nominated. We didn't win. Actually, Celia Cruz won, and I was happy that she won because she certainly deserved it. But I'll never forget... they announced that the Blind Boys of Alabama had won in a certain category. And so one of the guys from the group gets up and walks up these long steps to accept the award. And when he got up to the top of the steps and grabs the microphone, it says, "Took me 30 years to walk up those steps." And it really hit home with me. Yeah, really, it just like touched my heart because that's exactly what happened, you know. I mean, it took me... all those years to finally, you know, get some recognition, whatever, you know, for whatever it's worth, winning a Grammy, you know, the recognition it gets you. But more than anything is the feeling of gratification for, you know, my friends and family who all really felt, you know, that they were part of it. So it's a cool thing. I recommend it to everybody.
Absolutely. Well, Oscar, we really appreciate the time that you were able to carve out for us today. I know it's been beneficial to so many people. We're going to be playing your music throughout the show today, but we'll go ahead and let you go. I know that you have other things to do today. And again, we just really appreciate that you took the time to come on and share your story with our audience today and with us personally. And it was just a true joy on my part.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you to Northwest Prime on Seattle Wave Radio and all the people that tune in and listen to all the great music that you guys play. And I think that a debt of gratitude is owed to people such as yourself who really help expose the music to people who otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to. So thank you guys for being clear on your mission and playing, you know, great music and exposing the great artists. And it's my pleasure. And hopefully I'll get to see you guys soon, all right? Peace and blessings. And
all right.
All the best
to you.
Yes.
Well,
thank you, Oscar.
Ciao. Hasta luego.
Muchas
bendiciones. Okay.
Gracias.
De nada.
All right. Thanks, Oscar.
Hey. My pleasure, guys. You have a great day, rest of the day, and thank you so much for having me as part of the show. And if there's anything you need, give me a call. If you need to edit it, you need me to say anything or whatever, I'm here.
Perfect. All right. Well, we will not throw your number away. You can count on that. Some people call it
okay,
stalking.
Guys.
We call
Bye,
it fan. You know, tomato, tomato.
Yes.
You all be well. God bless. Ciao.
Okay, God bless.
Ciao.
All right. Bye-bye. That was fun, huh, Patty?
Yes, it was. He's such a great person.
Well, it really...
everything.
Absolutely. It just transcends right through, you know, right over the radio waves. You can just completely tell that he's a good guy, and he has the music to back it up. And, you know, we're all about supporting great people here. So that's just another great person to support in life, you know, as we go on this journey. We're going to play one of his songs right now, and then Patty and I will be back, and we're going to continue our conversation. And we have another great guest on the way. So we will be back here in probably about 5 minutes. minutes or so. Just a wonderful guy, a fantastic musician. He has a great story that he shared with all of us. And my co-host today, Patty Carrion, is a friend of mine that I met through music in Seattle.
I'm sure I butcher her name because I do that with everybody. It's just kind of my shtick now. I don't get anyone's name right hardly ever. The point that I really like these people, just because I don't get their name right, I really, really, really do like them. But Patty was born in Mexico. She's a resident now of the Northwest for the past 12 years. And Patty has a desire to build bridges and appreciation and understanding between Americanos and the Latino culture, which I'm also very invested in, as well as the other side, as the Americano. So now, before we bring on another guest, Alian Ramos, in the next few minutes, we're going to talk to Patty about her journey and her story. And her and her husband have are really well known in the music community in the Seattle area. They do a lot for the community. And I wanted to make sure that I got that out to everybody, because they're really giving people just as much as Oscar was and what he's doing, Patty is doing locally. So, right, Patty?
Wow.
Well, we
do try.
Well, you're doing a lot. Tell us what your goal is and how you got involved and what you're kind of seeing happening right now between the two cultures.
Okay.
So that was a lot of questions.
Yes. Where do I start? Okay. I got involved. Well, I started getting involved with the community. I don't even know when. I don't even know how exactly it happened. I just know that it happened. You know, it's kind of one of those things that you just start doing, and then other people start telling you, oh, you're a community organizer, or you are very involved in the community, and which I never noticed before until people started telling me that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it started because when I started as an interpreter, probably, I think it was 5-6 years ago, not only noticed that we needed a better interpretation of the language, but also a better interpretation of the cultures. The Latino culture is not that different from the American culture, but there are some things that we do differently or that we express differently. And that was the thing that I think sometimes we miss. And that's why I became so interested, because I also wanted to be understood, not just to express or to tell or help others understand, but to also be understood myself.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's why I started feeling that I was being misunderstood by so many teachers or friends, that it clicked in my head, oh, there is a need here, you know, and I love Seattle because it's very progressive, very open-minded. However, it's not just about being open-minded. It's also about really trying to understand what's going on.
Right. Putting yourself in someone else's shoes and walking their walk. And I mean, that's just good advice just for daily living, no matter who you are. Well, you've been in the Northwest now for 12 years. What was the catalyst that made you leave Mexico and then come to the United States?
Oh, gosh, that's a sad story.
No.
Oh, it is. I don't know if you are into movies.
Oh, yeah.
Because what I'm about to tell you, it's a
I'm a very shallow person.
That,
I love movies. I love movies and reality TV. I'm not very deep.
Yeah, well, I think that what happened was that what happened to many of other Mexicans is that we were living in Mexico City. We had lived in there for 8 years, and we were victims of crime quite a few times. The last time we were what is called now express kidnapping.
Mm.
So we were kidnapped in a taxi cab, and that was pretty much the last. You know, we were like, no, we can't go back to the little town where we came from, which is not that little, actually. It's Veracruz, the port of Veracruz. It's not that little, but it's it's not wages for musicians are very, very low. So we're thinking about, we have to raise a family, we want to do this, we want to do that. Gosh, what do we do? So then the opportunity came to the to come to the United States, and we took it, you know. And but my point about the movies was because, did you ever watch the movie The Terminal with Tom Hanks?
Yes, yes,
yes. Do you remember that he was told that in order to go to leave the airport and enter New York, he had to say that he was afraid of his native country? And he said, why would I be afraid? It's home. So that's sometimes how we feel, or how I feel, that it's a terrible story. I mean, it's a sad story, something sad that happened to me, but it's still the country where I was born, and I still see it as part of home, you know?
I get that, yeah. You know, it's still a part of who you are. There's still good things that happen there as well. There's a bond. You know, it's just like if you were in the, you know, here in the United States, if something bad happened to you, you would still consider yourself an American, and you would have a, you know, a affinity and a love. But, you know, tragedy does strike. So I do understand that. You're really big in the social media. How is social media affecting Latinos, and are Latinos active in social media? And are they becoming more active?
We're I think that we're one of the communities that is more active in social media, the Latinos. But I think that that would be a question for the next
Yeah, we'll definitely ask Elian about that.
Yes, Elian, because I just started social media or the Twitter because I was told that it was good for my business. Well, that's how I started it, you know, and I was looking at everybody, how they were tweeting and what they were tweeting, and then, you know, paying attention to the advices that they were giving about how important content is, and not just to promote yourself, but you actually have to create a community in order to be successful in social media.
You also have a blog, too, though. Why don't you tell everyone about your blog?
My blog, it's a little thing about myself and how I see things. I feel that sometimes I'm like this real weird kiddo, you know, around popular kids. But it's just a way of transmitting my thoughts and the thoughts that the work that we do as a company to the rest of our friends and to the rest of our followers. Because it may seem funny, but as Latinos, we do see things differently because we have exposure to two cultures, and we know how many people, according to the country where they come from, see things differently. And when we work on videos and when we work on music, we think about all those things, about how we're going to affect other communities too, or how other communities are going to see it. And that's, I think, one of the bonuses that we have.
Do you feel pressure to that you know people are watching you to have that pressure to set a good example or try to, you know, be as positive as possible? Is that an extra pressure?
Oh yes, definitely. We have to be very careful, especially because there is lots of what's the word I'm looking for here? Well, sometimes, you know, but it's like any culture. You have people that are professional, people that are not professional, as professional, and you always have to work harder for the ones that are not so professional in order to, you know, for your company or for you to stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that many times, you know, Latinos are labeled as lazy, or as they get everywhere late, or they don't pay attention to this, or they have bad English, all those kind of little things that, yes, add some extra pressure to our work.
Well, I really see the Latino population as a positive. I think that America is better for having the Latino influence. I'm very thrilled that the Latino community as a group seems to honor and respect and be proud of the Latinos who do make it. And that's why I'm thrilled to have successful Latinos on, because other Latinos love to hear that stuff. They don't knock them down for succeeding. And that's something I really respect with the Latino community. They're happy for the ones who go on and become maybe successful in the popular culture, or successful in business or whatever. They're really good about promoting and championing those people and helping others along the way. And I certainly respect that and can appreciate that very much.
And thank you for giving us the opportunity right now.
Well, you know, it's my pleasure, because I just have always just enjoyed Latin music, you know, Latin food, Latin people, Latin culture, along with a whole bunch of other cultures, you know.
Yeah.
I just am a real big observer of this human experience. And here in America, the Latin culture is a big part of that. And so many times a negative stereotype gets out about it, goes immigration. They just keep us sidetracked with that, with immigration. And there's so much good going on. You know, there's so much good to highlight. You know, we all get it about immigration. You know, everybody just wants a common sense approach to immigration. Okay, we got it. But, you know, there's so much good. You know, I'm just so tired of the negative being beat over the head all the time with it. You know, we get it.
Yes.
You know, there's just so much good going on, and people, you know, I just love my conversation last week with Rafael Tranquilino, again, you know, coming from Mexico City just a few years ago and following the blues. I mean, here's a guy in Mexico City. He's listening to the blues on the radio and on records, and he learned it from his father, and he's listened to music in America, and he leaves Mexico City with a guitar and a dream, you know, and he makes it. And the same thing with you. You know, you leave Mexico City and you come to the Northwest and you become a business owner and you're having these experiences that are phenomenal, and you're touching people's lives and you're making a difference and you're contributing to the economy and the human experience as a whole. How can we just as a life form just not be blessed by such events?
Yes, exactly. It's a working process, I guess, I think. And that's what we all keep thinking. It is a working process, and we're just going to keep working at it.
Well, we're still kind of Neanderthal in some ways, but, you know, little by little we get there, you know. I mean, our lifetime's better than our parents' lifetime, and their lifetime's better than their parents' lifetime, and, you know, you just build it little bit at a time. Well, we're going to play another one of Oscar's songs, and we're going to bring on our next guest, who has a lot to talk about with Latinos in social media, and she has a huge following. I mean, 18 million people are listening to what she has to say every week. Companies come to her to find out how to integrate Latinos into their products and advertising, and we definitely want to talk about that, because the Latino dollar is very strong. They're spending money just like the rest of us, and there's a lot of dollars to spend. So we're going to be right back as we get our other guest on the phone, and we're going to let you listen to some more great music, and we will be right back in just a couple moments.
Great.
La primera noche que te vi, yo sabía que era. para ti, mujer divina.
Plata, mi prieta, mi cielo, te quiero, te adoro, divina mujer.
Voy a llevarte con mi canción hasta el mismo cielo, y juntito a las estrellas, la más linda tú, mi preciosa mujer bella.
Plata, mi prieta, mi cielo, te quiero, te adoro, divina mujer.
Y es que siento que la quiero, siento que la adoro, y si no está ella a mi lado, como un niño lloro.
Mulata, mi prieta, mi cielo, te quiero, te adoro, divina.
Ay,
mujer.
Le doy gracias a la vida por haberme dado tanto. Me ha regalado tu risa, mujer divina. Viniste a curar mi llanto.
Mulata, mi prieta, mi cielo, te quiero, te adoro, divina mujer.
Companies come to her to find out how to
target, so to speak, the Latino dollar, as we talked about a little bit earlier, has a lot of power. That Latino dollar has a huge factor and a lot of power in America. And we certainly appreciate all of that. And we're going to talk to Elian about what we can do on both sides as Latinos and white people, I guess, and how we can move together forward in a positive way. There's a lot of positive things going on. She has her pulse on those things, and we're just thrilled to have her on. So thanks, Elian, for coming on with us today.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm thrilled to be here.
We are thrilled to have you. Tell us a little bit about your organization and what you do, just to kind of start us out.
Well, I wear several hats. I have my own company, which is Speak Hispanic Communications, and I help nonprofits and companies to kind of find a way to take their messages to the Latino community. And on my spare time, if there's such a thing, I am the vice chair of communications for Latism, Latinas in Social Media, and I basically offer, through Latism, we offer a platform for the Latino community to come and discuss the issues of the day, and to kind of gather together and figure out ways of taking action to make things better for the community.
Mm-hmm. And how is the Latino community with social media? Are you seeing a really big a growth in that field?
Well, we have been seeing a lot of growth from, you know, for the past couple of years. Since 2009, really, is when everything started to explode in the community online. But to me, it's just a reflection of what is going on offline. You know, if you take a look in the Latino community, where this is a community that is young, that is very tech savvy, and it's a community that is growing by leaps and bounds. And so, and it's also a community that is starting to understand its own power. And so I think social media has given people kind of the platform, the space to voice their concerns and their opinions and to organize and to mobilize in terms of all of these issues that are going on, not only for Latinos, but for the country in general. Everything that happens in the country affects us all, no?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, what are the top concerns right now that you're seeing?
Well, you know, as everyone else, we are very concerned about the economy. Obviously, this is, you know, our community has one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. Obviously, immigration is another hot topic, and there's been so much movement around that issue lately. There's been a lot of different coalitions that are forming out there that are doing great work offline, and we all kind of come together online to share our thoughts and to kind of brainstorm together. And so then we can go off online and continue the work that needs to be done. And there's also, you know, the jobs, the things about health, the Latino community. There's a lot of health concerns that are very, you know, that are just part of our community that we have. And there's so many other things. Everything that affects people at large in the country affects our community, and maybe, you know, a little more intensely.
Now, you mentioned that the Latinos are starting to understand their power that they have in the economy, mm-hmm. which they do have a lot of power, and I'm really glad that they're able to see that, you know, because they do contribute tremendously to the economy. What's kind of the direction that they want to go with that power, you know, as far as are they wanting to build more businesses? Are they wanting to do more higher education? What's kind of
the feel? Is it more entrepreneurship? Is it going higher education? You know, how are they channeling their power?
Well, we have to really keep in mind that, you know, when people talk about the Latino community, it's almost like we just got here. This is not a community that just got here. This is a community that's been here for a long time. Mm-hmm. There are even generations and generations of Latinos who have been in this country, have been part of the economy. So that's one thing, right? But what is going on, too, is that waves of immigration that have come, you know, besides the people that have been here for centuries, there's waves of generation of immigration that have come, who have started to establish themselves in the country, and you see that Latinos are starting businesses at a higher rate than other ethnicities, and you see, for example, that Latinas are attending college more than any other group of women, and you see, you know, all of these different movements that are happening in different aspects of the United States culture. So you see the community is kind of coming of age, and when that happens and people start taking a consciousness, you know, they start saying, hey, wait a minute, I do contribute. I do, it's, you know, I'm not just an immigrant that came to this country yesterday, but I do matter and I do have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when things start happening. That's when people start organizing and taking action.
Right. See, I'm from San Diego. I was born in San Diego. I was raised in San Diego and in Las Vegas throughout my childhood. But I was around the Latino culture my whole life. I really don't understand a life without that. So I would go to Old Town, you know, in San Diego all the time. I had friends who were Mexican mostly. I have relatives who married people from Mexico. So I'm always surprised at the divide, because for me personally, I didn't grow up with that divide. So that's why, mm-hmm. you know, I've wanted to, on this show, when I had the opportunity to try to get that word out, so because I don't understand, you know, where it's coming from. And the only way that I know, because I don't live in the community like you and Patty do, is it always shocks me when I hear it that there's a misunderstanding or a divide there. So in my little part, you know, whatever I can do to kind of help bridge that from my end, I want to do. And that's why shows I think like this are important. This whole, and I do understand that immigration is a huge issue. Everybody's talking about immigration. I really don't get why I supported amnesty every single time. I don't understand why we just can't. I mean, if they're worried about terrorism, it's certainly not coming from the Latino community.
Yes, exactly.
I don't really understand that way of thinking at all. So I know that there's more that we can also do from the outside looking in, besides only consuming tequila and Mexican food. There's got to be more that we can do to help, you know, to help the cause.
That is so true. Well, there is a lot that we can do, all of us. You know, it takes two to tango, right? Like they say. I think, you know, whenever possible, we need to think of ourselves as the bridge. How can I be the, you know, each one of us is a representative of the community that we come from, you know, and by that extent, we are also a representative of the human community, the larger human community, right? So when we think of it in terms of that, it's like, how can I represent my community the best that I can? How can I be the bridge? How can I be that person that is going to show somebody from another ethnicity, hey, I'm a human being just like you, and I, you know, I want to reach out. I come in peace, you know.
Right.
You know, and it takes kind of taking personal responsibility about how do you do that, and how do you look for the human aspect in everyone that you meet. Remember that whatever your actions are, you know, it's a sad thing, but whenever we act for good or for bad, it kind of reflects on everybody else. You know, I mean, you see, for example, with these things that happened in Boston this week, how the chatter online and offline, it's being about how these people come from this particular area in Russia. And, you know, and mm-hmm. I am sure that these two individuals don't represent that whole area of the world, but they're now being pinpointed as, you know, that whole group of people is this way. So we kind of have to be very conscious about that, you know, especially in a country where, unfortunately, there's still a lot of prejudices going on. But I am very positive and very hopeful that this is something that is turning. I think that now you see, for example, even during the Boston, the tragedy in Boston, you see there was a Latino, one of the heroes that helped to save some of the people there was a Latino. You know, and so, like, I think when people mm-hmm. start seeing this kind of things, we are human, just like you, and we just want a good life for our family, just like everybody else. I think when we do that, and more importantly, when we have the knowledge, when we understand things in a better way, or I'm not going to say in a better way, but when we understand the way that things work and we are able to engage in a positive dialogue with somebody else who may have a different perspective, they may start to respect us, you know. And with that respect comes, you know, the understanding this is a person that I should treat in a certain way. I should be considered too because I respect him or her as a person, and vice versa. Yeah. By the same token, I think that in the online world, we have a great opportunity as a community, and I'm talking about Latinos, but it goes also for people in other ethnicities. We have a great opportunity to share knowledge and tools to help empower other people. I think when a community that is aware is a community that is empowered, right? And that goes for any community. So when we share knowledge and tools and opportunities online, we are empowering these people so that they can take that knowledge and that those tools to their own communities. And if we all do that, I think we can empower our whole community, we can empower our country to heal from all of the prejudices. You know, it's a rising tide lifts all the boats, right? So by sharing all of these positive things and all of this knowledge, we are helping to lift all of the boats for the whole country. And it's going to benefit
absolutely. Everybody. Absolutely. Absolutely. Patty?
Yes, me. Hello, Leanne.
Hi, Patty.
So great.
You
want
me
to finally see your voice. I do owe you a mojito. Sorry, Lori. We're having mojitos afterwards.
Oh, I like mojitos.
Leanne, I have a question for you.
Oh, good. That's even better if they're good for you. Love that.
Leanne, when I joined Twitter, I was told, well, I actually wasn't told. For some reason, I started noticing the hashtag of Latism.
Mm-hmm.
And I started noticing that many Latinos were using it. And, of course,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to be part of it. But why or how is it exactly that it became so big? Why do you think that it became so big? Because now, I think that when I was started using it, weren't that many, but now it's, gosh, this is, and it's nice to see that it's from many Latinos with so many different perspectives, so many different points of view, political, social, and cultural. I mean, it's just an amazing movement. How did it grow?
Well, I think what happened is, you know, I think it's the experience of all of us, right? 5 years ago, almost 6 years ago now, when I first joined social media, and you know, it happens to all of us, that you start sending, you know, for example, on Twitter, you start sending messages out there, and it's kind of, you're sending them out to the ether, right? But all of a sudden, when, you know, you start noticing, hey, there's other people here who believe the same kind of things that I believe, or that, or who are affected by the same issues that I'm affected by, or who think similarly to me or not, you know, but there are people who share my interests, they share my ethnicity, and they get me, right? And so I think what happened with Latism, and maybe, you know, maybe we were just there at the right time, right? The right place at the right time. But I think, you know, and you see it in other communities that have popped up afterwards too. It's almost like you find a congregation of minds there, and all that you need when you have all of that mind power, you know, it's just savvy Latinos, very smart Latinos, very opinionated Latinos. All that you need to foster the community is to give them the platform so they can be themselves, so they can express themselves the way that they want to, you know, without restrictions, without telling them, oh, you can't say this here, or you have to be civil, mm-hmm. but don't be, you know, but we're not going to censor what you're saying. And when you give people that space, they come, you know. I think this is what the Latism chats have done all of this time, you know, for 5 years we've been doing it. It's offer that safe space where people can come and, mm-hmm. and express their opinion. And when you have passionate people expressing their opinion, you better believe that other people are going to mm-hmm. take notice. You know, I mean, this is the reason why, you know, we have the White House taking notice of what we do. We have senators coming to our chats. We have, you know, all of these people, they have noticed that this is the platform where people congregate to speak their minds. And if you are a person of power, be it in a corporation or in a, you know, in the government, whatever, you need to reach out to this group of people, because these are the influential people online, but they're also influential in their own communities. These are the people you want to talk to and reach out to. And I think that's been the passion of people. That's what's been the driver for Latism, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
I know that many people are coming to you now for advice, powerful people, politicians, right?
Yep.
How do you handle that?
Well, it takes a lot of time, for sure. But I think, you know, you have to stay humble, first of all, because, you know, I always joke around and I say, oh, you know, I've only just begun, you watch me. But, you know, but seriously, I think that, you know, you have to be able to stay humble, and you have to always think, like I was saying before, you are a representative for your community. And so whatever I do, you know, whatever, if I have the chance to speak to somebody who can make a difference in my community and for my own family, you know, I'm part of the community. So whatever I am able to do that can benefit my family, my community, the Latinos in the whole country, and even, you know, by extension, Latin America, you better believe I'm going to do it, you know. At the same time, I have to remember to be the bridge. So it's not just about the politicians contacting me, but how do I bring the politicians down to where my people are so that they talk to my people? You know, that's what I want. I want to be that bridge of communication between the two. And I, you know, and I think I'm doing my best to become that into you know, through Latissim, to have people have their say. It's one thing when we talk to each other, Patty, and you know, we have a lot of fun and it's great. But it's another thing when we are able to talk directly to the lawmakers. That's when we can have an impact, because that and the voting booth, they won't be able to ignore us, you know. They have to listen. Mm-hmm. When there's this group of powerful people pushing them, they have to act accordingly. That's what I want, you know. That's ultimately what the goal is.
Well, yes. Right now we're seeing more politicians that are actually Latino themselves. And so I think it's just very, you know, we're very close. In fact, I actually thought it was going to happen this time, but it didn't, of actually seeing a vice presidential or presidential candidate emerge from the Latino community. So we're really on the cusp of that, and which is another great thing. Like you said, the White House is taking notice, but eventually the White House is going to have to take notice, because there will be a Latino sitting there. So that's just a matter of time. I was just very disappointed that it didn't happen this time. What politicians are you seeing that are really carrying the movement in a positive way?
Oui. You're putting me in hot water here, chica.
No. Well, for me, I like Marco Rubio. Okay, I know that he's polarizing on some issues as well. But basically, as a human bridge, as we were kind of talking, to me and what I see, I, you know, I'm sure he needs work in certain areas, but personally, I seem to like Marco Rubio, and I mean there's a lot of them out there, but he's getting a lot of attention lately. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking that you know, I mean, like I said, I think he's not got it 100%, but mm-hmm. you know, he's been trying.
Yeah,
and I'm not political on any stretch of the imagination.
I am political in the sense of, you know, I'm going to talk about political things because they are important.
Right.
But I'm not political in terms of partisanship, or I try not to be, you know, the best that I can, because obviously I do have my leanings, like everybody else. But I'm going to talk in very general terms here, and I think that there's such a great interest right now in the Latino community, and I'm loving every second. You know, if you see, for example, there was a couple of articles this past couple of days, because you have people from, you know, Bonner who are he's starting to follow a lot of the Latino media. You know, he even followed me, you know, which I'm very flattered by.
Mm-hmm.
But and you see that not only from him, but you see it from, for example, on Thursday we had Mayor Bloomberg in the Latissim party. We had, you know, some of the senators, you have Menendez and Durbin and Bennett came over to the party and were chatting with people on our chat. And I think all of this has to do, well, obviously, that the immigration reform is going on, right? And they all want to have some kind of gauge where their community is on that issue. But also, after the elections in November, I think it was kind of a wake-up call that, you know, if you don't engage the Latino community, if you don't at least try to come halfway to where they are, and if you keep alienating them or ignoring them, you're going to pay a price. And, you know, so I applaud the fact that all of these politicians are reaching out, that they're showing, even if it's not true or, you know, maybe true or not, but they at least they're showing interest, they're showing that they care for the community, and I think that is a positive. I think we need to become a lot more savvy in terms of how do we use that interest, how do we leverage that to get the things that are going to benefit the community. And this is where, you know, we have elections next year, you know, for the midterm elections, but how do we take all of this momentum that the community has right now and we make it work next year for the issues that we need to have? How do we make it work for immigration now that we have, everybody seems to be interested in getting somewhere with the reform, right? So that's where we need a little bit more work to for the community to understand that, you know, to be civically engaged is not something that happens every 4 years at the general elections, but it's an everyday thing. And, you know, it's going to take a little time. I think we are moving in that direction. We're getting a lot savvier. But, we, you know, it needs a little more work. But it's all good. I mean, as long as they keep reaching out to us and listening, it's good. I think we're going to get somewhere.
Well, absolutely. Just getting them to the table is half the battle. I mean, shoot, just that they show up is remarkable. What is the message that you think that the Latino community wants to get out or accomplish with immigration?
I think the main message has to be, I think we need to change the conversation, the way the conversation has been led up to now. Immigration is not about, you know, people who are aliens or who are illegal. Human beings cannot be illegal, right? So the conversation has to switch from that to, these are human beings that you're talking about. These are families that are being broken up. These are lives that are being shattered. And how do we take the conversation down to that place where we are thinking of what is the best possible way that we can deal with all of these lives that are being broken right now, all of this, you know, potential havoc that is going to be brought upon this large group of people into the society by extension, right? Because these are people, children who are growing up in broken families. These are people who are not being able to function like normal human beings. How do we take it to the place where the agreement that is taken in the end works in the best possible way for all of these human beings that we're talking about? And, you know, and I think we can get there. We can get there if we put enough pressure. We have the power to put enough pressure on the lawmakers so that they make it so. And, you know, we're not going to stop. I'm personally not going to stop until that happens.
Is it more prevalent, maybe, anti-immigration along the southern states, maybe border states? And is it less maybe combative as you move north, or is it just widespread?
I originally, I don't know, there are some states that mm-hmm. tend to be more liberal, while others are mm-hmm. less open to new, you know, to new people coming into their areas. Maybe liberal is not the right way, but they're more open and some are less open. But I think that it's ideological lines versus state lines, you know, or versus geographical mm-hmm. lines. It's more, there are people who are, you know, welcoming of new cultures and who can understand the human side of this issue. And there are still the people who can't. And, you know, and each person has their own set of reasons why they believe a certain way, which is why I think it's so important that we are the bridge, that we start showing, you know, we are not aliens who are going to, you know, bomb.
Take over the country.
Right. City. Exactly. We're just people here who want to work just like you and who want to raise our children just like you do. This is why it's
right.
so important, you know. Each one of us carries a message with us, and if we can show that we're just people like everybody else, I think all of that fear that breeds the prejudice and the racism, all of that is going to stop, you know, at some point. It may not happen overnight, mm-hmm. but eventually it will happen, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, little by little, but yeah, I think a lot of it comes is fear-based. Some of it is ignorance. And there might be some people who have some basis for their foundation of those type of things. But I think Patty and I were talking about this last hour. You know, that you have to take that on a one-on-one and not put a whole culture or race or community under the same umbrella. If you've had a bad experience with one
exactly.
one person or whatever, you know, it's like you said, that human community, and you know, as humans, we all have a basic need to be heard, and that's why I think you're so successful, especially, you know, with social media, is because there's an outlet, a voice for people can be heard, and that's all people want to do, no matter who you are in life. You
yes.
just want to feel like you were heard, and maybe you're not going to get exactly what you want, but at least you've been able to express that, you've been able to be heard, and then and your thoughts or your reasoning even considered. That's all people want is a common sense approach to things. You know?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I think one of the positive things that is happening is the fact that there's people from both parties working on the immigration bill, the immigration bill that came out this week, and that's very positive because, you know, we may not all get everything that we want. You know, there's going to have to be some compromise, but that's life. Life is about compromising, right? It's about finding the one common denominator that's going to hurt the least people. And, you know, we're going to have to continue working on the bill because there's still things there that don't necessarily work. But I think it's a great first step, and it's pointing in the right direction that there's different kinds of ideologies involved in developing it.
Well, one thing, they should
work on everything that way, by
sure.
the way, you know.
Well, you know, one thing that's driven me away from politics is the polarizing thing, because I see myself more in the middle and not extreme one way or another. And I actually believe, and I could be totally wrong, but my belief and my experience is most people reside in that center. And they're not so far one way or another. Of course, you need both sides, you know. But I think most people kind of reside there in the center, and
mm-hmm.
And so then they see politics. You know, nobody wants to be. Most people don't want to be real confrontational. They don't want to get into it with people. They don't, you know, that we're just living our lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just going to school, raising our kids, paying our bills. You know, that type of thing. Nobody mm-hmm. wants to really, and that's why you need people on both sides who can go. To battle for you, I guess, but it kind of drives us away from politics because it's, you know, it's just kind of, it gives you a bad feeling. And someone had said the other day when the bombing in Boston that there were no red states and no blue states when it came to helping everybody, they were just humans running and helping each other. And
exactly.
I just hate that it takes an event like 9/11 or Boston or wherever to bring us to that basic human level again. I wish we could incorporate that more into our day-to-day lives instead of it having to come to such horrific tragedies for us to recognize that people were equal in the way that they rose up to the occasion and helped each other on a basic human soul-to-soul level. Like, you know, it's just that
I guess it may be naive on my part, but I cannot understand as a human race why we just can't overcome that, you know, better than we are.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I mentioned before how it's this individual responsibility. I think going a little beyond that, you guys, for example, have a platform from which you can talk and connect to people and spread knowledge. I think if all of us who have, you know, a Twitter account is a platform, you know, a Facebook account is a platform, a radio show online is a platform, a blog is a platform. So we all have the opportunity right now. We're not sitting passively receiving information. We all have the opportunity to become a channel, to transmit information. So it's our responsibility as individuals, but also as people who have that platform, to keep reminding people, hey, we can't forget, this is what happened, this is what's been happening, this is what we need to be paying attention to. Hey, listen up to this. This just happened today, but this just happened 10 years ago. Don't forget. It's our responsibility to keep it fresh in the minds of people. Keep fresh the reasons on why we can't give up the fight, on why we not the fight with each other, but the fight for justice, the fight for what is right, you know, the fight for what is going to make life better for everyone, and for, you know, what is the human side. It's our responsibility to keep that fresh in the minds of people. You know, I commend people like you who have this show, and you're using it to kind of highlight all of these positive things that are going on, because that's it. That's what we need more of.
Well, it's just getting the conversation started. You know, I just really feel like if people could hear both sides without the I do believe that people can have rational conversations. They might come from different parts of the world or different philosophies or different backgrounds, but you can have a rational conversation, even if you agree to disagree. That doesn't have to break out in hatred, you know. As families, we do that every day. We don't agree with half the things that go on in our family all day long, but we still, agree to disagree and we move forward. And so that's what I like to do here is, you know, when we want to talk about things that, you know, we agree or disagree with, but just have a civilized conversation. And then maybe I don't agree with 100%. Maybe I only agree with 30%. Well, that's 30% that I didn't have when I showed up, you know. And so, or yeah, maybe I agree with more. Maybe I agree with 100%. But at least I just, once people start being so hateful, the channels just shut down and we get nowhere at that point. But I really do believe, I really have faith in humanity that we could have a civilized conversation and at least walk away with a tiny fraction more of understanding. And then you build on that, you know, I do a little bit, you do a little bit, everybody does a little bit. And before you know it, you know, you've gotten somewhere better than you were before, hopefully.
Exactly. I think, you know, that no matter what your area is, what your niche is, you know, in business, if you're in business, or you know, whether you have your own show or not, or your own blog, whatever, doesn't matter. What matters is that we always remember to spread light, you know.
Right.
When you do that, and when you work remembering that, you know, you are doing this and you are a human being and you want to reach out to other human beings, when you do things like that and you're spreading light, you will be successful. People respond to that, and passion breeds passion, and that brings success. And so as your tide rises, you know, everybody else's tide rises to help to lift all of us. I think if we remember that is one is going to bring us success, but it's going to also help to lift everybody else who is part of our community. You know, we can't forget that.
Mm-hmm. Patty, I know you have more questions.
Yes, thank you. You've been stealing the microphone from me. I have a question because it, like what Laura said about turning off on your political side because you just can't handle all these polarizing thoughts and comments and everything. You are there, Leanne. You have to deal with all of that, with the good and the bad and everything. So how do you stay motivated? How do you do it? How do you just turn off your ears and don't listen to the negative side? I don't think so, because you have to. I mean, we have to. So.
Well, I think, you know, I think when you're doing what you love, you don't need outside motivation. You know, it comes out of you. And right now, our community is going through so much things that affect the community, but they affect me personally. They affect my family and the people that I love. So I cannot disconnect from that. I have the responsibility to fight for my community, to fight for my family. You know, and when I say fight, I don't mean I'm not a violent person, but at all. But I'm a geek, okay? But I mean standing up for what is right for my family and for my community and for this country that we love. You know, we live here, we have our lives here, we love this country. So, you know, we want positive things to happen in this country. And so it's my responsibility to help to make things better. And that's what keeps me motivated. It's something that I feel very deeply about, and I don't wake up thinking, you know, oh, I have to do this or I have to do that. It's not something that I have to do, but it's something that that I do because it's my passion, and it comes out of me. I can't help it, you know. I don't know if that's an answer that works for everyone, but it's about the way it works for me.
No, I believe that God plants a different seed in everybody, and your seed might be different from my seed. But because we all can't be political activists, okay? That's not our calling, but it is somebody's calling, you know? And we all have our gifts. So mine is that I happen to have this show that, whatever reason, you know, quite a few people listen to. And I just have a spirit of compassion and kindness. So I just try to kind of follow that. And there's other people who have a spirit for maybe activism, or they have a spirit of music or medical or something else. And so it takes us all to find what that little seed that was planted in us, and then we kind of just grow. And I can certainly appreciate, I'm glad that seed got planted in you, because I would not be the right carrier for that. I would just be scared and crying the whole time.
Yeah,
I'm so sensitive. I would just be...
I think it's like you said, you know, everybody has their own thing. I don't know that I am a political activist. I just think that I'm somebody who cares deeply about the community. And so I don't do it because I want the label or the recognition per se, but it's more like, you know, it's what is right for me. I think that, you know, like I was saying before, it doesn't matter what your particular talent or your particular way of expressing yourself is. if you are sharing light and if you are sharing those positive things that emanate from you, then you are also an activist in your own way. You know, you're being an activist for good. That's you know, and all of us have that potential to do that. You know, it doesn't have to be expressed in a political way, but it can be expressed in many different ways. You know.
Mm-hmm. Patty.
Totally agree with her. Although I do see her as a political activist, she's my hero. I admire her like crazy. Yes.
Except when we're doing
that
after parties.
Oh yeah. I know, and I've noticed that you're getting very close to Dolores Huerta.
Oh,
another huge figure in our community.
I love.
Are you two working on something?
No, I think Dolores, I'm very fortunate to have met her and to have been able to spend some time with her as a person, you know, like beyond the work that she does, the amazing job that she does, my God, and whatever it is that I do, you know, in my own humble little corner. I am so fortunate. I think that happens with Dolores if you meet her in person, I don't know if you know her, but she is an amazing mentor to young people in general. It doesn't matter who it is, and you see her talking to everyone, every single person that she crosses, she stops to listen and to talk to. And it could be, you know, the person selling, you know, tacos in the corner. It could be the president of the United States. It could be anyone. She will stop and talk to you and give you a hug, and she, you know, give you advice or give you a kind word. She's just like that. And I think we're not working on anything in particular. I think that she sees it as her mission to help others, and and that goes for everyone that she comes across. And she'll never turn you back, you know. She'll mm-hmm. be open to you. I'm fortunate that she, you know, when she's in town, she sometimes calls me up, and I'm able to sit down with her and have lunch, or you know. And learn more than anything. I learn from her. Every time she opens her mouth, it's like reading into a book, you know. That's pretty much it. You know, I've met her family, and I'm very good friends with some of her kids. And so, you know, it's a beautiful thing, and it's an amazing opportunity to learn from a legend, from somebody who has so much wisdom to share. I'm very blessed and very humbled to be her friend. You know,
mm-hmm.
we
sure.
need
you,
we
you
need
do
more
know
more
sorry
Dolores.
Who
what
sorry
what do you say?
I was gonna say that, Lori, you do know who Dolores Huerta is, right?
Mm-hmm. Mhm. Mhm. Okay. Yeah. Well, and I was just thinking while the two of you were talking that how great it is to still have mentors. Even, you know, you're hearing Eliane talk about that she, you know, even though she has all these people kind of looking at to her as a mentor, she still has a mentor. And how great for young women to have good mentors out there to pattern themselves or follow from or take cues from. We were talking about that, how important that was with Oscar Hernandez, for him to have a mentor when he was young, and how he tried to expose himself to people who knew more, and he only could get better by being around people who knew more than he did, and he called young people to expose themselves to people who had more information so that they could learn. And here it's full circle. We're coming right back to that again and how important that is. And I think it's just a good thing for the community to have leaders as such. I think that they need more. And I'm yes. thrilled to see people stepping up to the plate because, again, there's a need. There's a huge community of people looking for answers. And when mm-hmm. we want people to take up the ball, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the great things that comes from somebody like Dolores doing this, she's such a fountain of wisdom. She's been doing this for almost 6 decades, right? And so mm-hmm. And the fact that she's that open, it also teaches people like me, you know, and I'm just getting started on this, you know. It also teaches us that once you get to that level, and even while you're going up towards that level, you know, if you aspire to go that way, you can never forget that there's people behind who also need your hand and to extend a hand back and pull them up with you as you grow up, you know. And that, I think, for me, seeing her being that humble, you know, and seeing her, I mean, this is somebody who, she's at a hotel, and before she leaves, she helps to take out the sheets from the bed so that the workers that come into the room to clean it have less work, you know. This is somebody who stays that humble. It teaches you to be humble, and it teaches you to think of the people who come after you and how you can help them. To me, that is precious knowledge. That is nothing that you learn at college or anywhere else. You learn it from watching these people, the leaders, do it. And a true leader will do it, you know, and hopefully mm-hmm. those of us who are behind will learn to be that humble and that helpful to other people as leaders like Dolores are, you know. That's my hope.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Patty, I was just thinking while you guys were talking there that even though I know who Dolores is, maybe other people don't. So you want to explain that and tell people about her?
Yes. Dolores Huerta, it's someone that fought along with Cesar Chavez for civil rights. It was, back in the 1960s, am I correct, Leanne?
Yes.
Yes, exactly. She co-founded with Cesar Chavez, which is another, of course, is a big leader in the community. They co-founded the National Farm Workers Association. And I mean, Dolores has been a political activist, an activist, a great woman, a great leader in the community, fighting for the well-being of all Latinos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's
and also for the rights of women, for the rights of, you know, workers in
yes.
general. She's just an amazing person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the most vocal voices also in the Latino community. So you see, this is an 83-year-old woman. She just turned 83 last week. And she is the first one whenever there's a march, whenever there is a protest, whenever there is somewhere where the voices of Latinos are needed, she's the first one in line, walking and marching and speaking up, you know.
Well, it's been a long road, but a lot of progress has been made since she started. And the same thing with Cesar Chavez. Once, you know, I mean, if you're looking forward, it looks like a mountain that you might not be able to overcome. But now looking back, they've made a lot of progress. And, you know, we were talking, again, I go back to Oscar and him saying the first time he went to the Grammys, he lost and somebody won, and when they got up there, they said it took them 30 years to make that walk to accept that Grammy, and it made an impression on him. But they had
worked hard as a musician for 30 years, never got recognized, and then finally, you know, they win a Grammy. And so that just made me think of Dolores again. You know, it's a very long road, but looking back now, you can see where all of her work and all of her effort is starting, you know, has paid off. It's continuing to pay off. It's paying off in a bigger way, that it's taken 30, 40, 50 years, 60 years, but, you know, the fruit of all of that is blooming.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And that gives us hope for, you know, the fights that we're picking up now, no? It gives us hope that all of these other social justice issues are going to be resolved too. It's great that we have people who have paved the way, because at least now, you know, they have to pretty much make up their own road to do this. They were, you know, some of the first Latinos who actually started acting in an activist way. And so now we have the president. We have they have pretty much lined the path for us. So we're very fortunate for that. And that's going to make our road a lot easier to traverse.
Well, I'm very hopeful for the future generations, because it seems like each generation is a little less rigid. You know, they're a little more open. They're a little more tolerant. They're living in a kind of different world than we lived in our generation or our parents, and it kind of shakes loose, you know, a lot of that grime and grit that we've carried, you know, that we carry forward with us, but maybe less each generation.
Yeah, I always joke around that we're the sandwich generation, you know, at least in my age range, because most of us still have our parents, you know, thank God. And then we also have children, you know. And so I, for example, have an 18-year-old, and my mom is still relatively young. And so it's up to us to kind of, build on all of the efforts that our parents have made to bring us here, to raise us if we were born here. And then building it for the next generation, for our daughters, for our grandkids. When, you know, I hope I don't have grandkids anytime soon, but I'll have them eventually. So, you know, we always have to keep thinking about how am I going to make it better for them. And, you know, I still have my mom. How do I make it easier for my mom now that she's getting older? How do I build a better world for my daughter and for my future, you know, grandkids? And I think it's a privileged position to be in. You know, we have a lot more power than we realize to really make a difference. And if we all embraced it, I think we could do so much more.
And Patty, I'll give you the last question.
Okay.
You give me the last question.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Very nice of you. So, as a woman, Eliane, how do you juggle with everything? You're a business owner. You're a political activist. You're a mother. How do you do it? I remember on Facebook. It's complicated. Once on Facebook, a friend posted, okay, Latinas, in a scale from 1 to 10, how clean is your house? And I was just like, oh, shoot. My house probably is a 1. Seriously. But are the things that we have to think.
I know. It gets easier as the kids grow older, that's for sure. When I had my daughter, and I had my daughter right at the beginning of my career, you know. During her time growing up, I was trying to build something out of nothing, like we all do when we are starting, you know, and the traveling and the working more than we do, than we need to, because we need to prove ourselves, right? And we need to, when you're a woman and you're a minority, you kind of have to do triple the work to be recognized for half of the merit, right? To be given the half of the merit.
Yes.
So it was a lot harder when my daughter was younger. That's for sure. You know, and I also was a single mom for some time there in between. Now she's a little older, and she can take care of a big part of, you know, her basic needs. Then, you know, it's gotten a lot easier. Handling all of the different aspects, you know, like the doing the work online and doing the all of the different, you know, things that I do, it takes not sleeping pretty much. It's but again, you know, when you have the passion, I don't feel tired. I don't feel you know, like I want to give up or I'm doing too much, because it's fun for me. You know,
mm-hmm. We have the passion
every second. Exactly, I'm enjoying every second. I love having the conversations. I love seeing people getting riled up because there's something that they don't like and they're going to act on it and do something about it. I love being able to help my clients on my personal business, you know, because when they do well, I do well. So it's, mm-hmm. when you enjoy what you're doing and you're doing it from the heart, it's not a burden, and it doesn't feel like a sacrifice, you know. And then you have also the personal rewards of seeing, you know, your children at some point get the fact that you work so hard, and so they start picking up those little pieces of you and implementing them on themselves, you know, like the little parts of your personality. So I see my daughter, for example, how she's so intense into school and how she wants to. She's a very strong woman at 18, you know. And so seeing those kind of things give me a lot of personal satisfaction, and that helps me to want to keep going, you know. And to mm-hmm. be better, so that she also sees that example in her life and wants to become better too. You know, mm-hmm. one of my favorite things is, for example, going places and volunteering with her, and you see how in the beginning it would be, you know, when she was younger, and it would be like, oh, I don't really want to go, Mom, you know, and like, why do I have to do this, and whatever. And I would, you know, I would make her go with me, or like, you know, I never forced her, but I kind of, oh, no, you're coming. And then to see that moving into, you know, now she does it without me sometimes, you know. She volunteers for something. She has gone on marches without me, you know, for the Dream Act and things like that. And to see that little bug of social justice has awakened in her as well. You know, and that's the next generation carrying it forward. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's ultimately what we all would like, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, as our show's winding down here, I certainly appreciate that you have taken the time to come on with us today. I want to give you, Aileen, the last word. What do you want people to walk away with today after listening to this show? What would you want to tell them about moving forward?
Well, I think if I can say anything, I'm going to say it about social media, because that's, you know, that's a big part of my work, but also it's a place where I think it's very easy to get lost in, you know, the little trivialities of social media, the little nitty-gritty. You see, we have the largest adoption numbers in social media, and that a lot of those numbers come from entertainment or from, you know, people following things that are not necessarily consequential, which is fine. You know, as Patty knows, we do have our fun online, which is great. You know, we have our after parties, we play the music, and we laugh, and we joke around, and it's awesome. But, you know, we can't forget that things like social media and everything that we do, they're tools, right? Social media is a tool. And so with everything that is going through, we need to remember to use these tools wisely. Everything that is happening that is affecting our community, it affects us to some point, you know. So when I'm not saying that everybody should become an activist, but again, going back to we are all ambassadors of our community, right? And so make sure that if you're using the tools, you are representing your community properly, and you are not becoming further that feeds more resentment or more hate towards our community. You know, be the bridge, be the ambassador, be the sharer of light. And I think little by little we'll be able to overcome all of the ignorance and all of the divisions that are in the country. Ultimately, we all want to live side by side in a peaceful way, and we all want to have good life. So that would be my message for the day, I guess.
That's perfect. That's a fantastic way to end. And I want to tell everybody that they could go to your website, and I'm just going to spell it out so that they get the correct spelling, because sometimes it's hard with spelling, but it's ELIANNERAMOS. Okay, so ELIANNERAMOS, RAMOS.com. And then they can also find you on Twitter. And do you want everyone to use that hashtag, LATISM?
Yes, hashtag Latism. And my Twitter handle is ERGeek, as in nerd, goddess. ERGeek goddess.
Got it. ERGeek goddess. And you
yes,
can, and
because
when,
she's
and
a geek.
Huh? Because she's
yes,
a huge
yes.
geek. And we want people to get on Twitter, you know. I'm on Twitter all the time, and Patty's on Twitter all the time, and Alian's on Twitter all the time. And get a Twitter account. It's free. There's not a lot of things in life that are free. Twitter's free, and it's really easy to sign up.
Yes, and we hope
bring
to
you hours of fun.
Well, thank you
so very, very much for coming on and having this conversation with us today. I really appreciate it, and I know I learned something today, so thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me. This is actually, it was a very nice conversation. Thank you for letting me bring out all of my activist thoughts to this program.
Thank you, Alian.
I hope if anything sticks, that is, you know, be the share of light. That can be like the one thing. But thank you so much. You definitely are sharers of light. Thank you for giving me light today.
Oh, well, thank you. And thanks for sharing your light with us as well. It was absolutely a pleasure. Good call, Patty.
Thank you.
All right, guys, and you on Twitter. Have a wonderful day.
See you on Twitter.
Okay.
Yes.
See you on Twitter. Okay,
bye. Bye.
That was a great conversation, Patty.
It was, wasn't it? She's,
mm-hmm.
She has so much information, so much valid information that it's worth to share it, definitely.
Absolutely. Well, before we go off with another one of Oscar Hernandez's songs, I just want to, you know, kind of just let you wrap it up today and what your thoughts are and what you would like to share with people and want them to know.
Wow, you didn't tell me that I was finishing the show. Thank you for giving me
something very philosophizing now.
Oh, gosh. Yes, exactly. You're putting me on the spot. No, I'm kidding. No, thank you so much for inviting me to co-host this show with you. It's been an amazing opportunity. I had fun. I had so many names in my mind for who I wanted to invite, and unfortunately, I mean, not everyone is
so busy because they're great leaders, great people, that we cannot have all of them, right, in one single show.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to speak up for the Latino community, for all Latinos out there, and to let us share a little bit of our thoughts and what we love and who we are. And, you know, just that we are here to work with you together to make this world better.
Absolutely. No, I'm happy to do it. We'll have to do it again. Hopefully, you know, the Latino community will make me an honorary Latino. And I will say I have done my share of consumption of tequila and Mexican food, so that ought to count for something anyway.
I know. You still have to come to my house and try some real Mexican food.
I will. You shouldn't say that to me because I show up. People are always surprised. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, I'll have to meet you here, or we'll do this, or we'll do that. I'm one of those people who actually show up.
Great.
That stuff. I'm like, yeah, all right, I'll be there. Like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, you really did show up. Yep, I am the one that shows up. So just a word out there for anyone listening. If you're going to invite me, don't invite me if you don't mean it, because I will show up. I'll sleep on your couch, you know. I'll eat your food.
That sounds great to me.
I'll visit your kids, you know. It don't matter.
Awesome. That's great.
Well, we're going to go out with Oscar Hernandez, and just appreciate all the guests who came on today and to join us on Twitter. We're always having a great conversation on there, and I'll be talking with Patty here probably in the next few minutes on Twitter, because we're both addicts.
Yes, we are.
Of Twitter, and we certainly appreciate everyone who tuned into the show, and we just hope that you shine your light in whichever capacity that you feel called for the betterment of all of humanity. So thanks for joining us today, and we will catch you on the next show. I don't know when that is. Oh, it's tomorrow. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
There you go, tomorrow. Yes.
Tomorrow at 1 o'clock. So we will just see everybody back then.
Perfect. Thank you.